Hello, everyone. My name is Christopher Swanson, and I am the editor of this podcast, The Neighbor Next Door. I am just coming on today to give a quick note before we begin this episode. This time of year is a busy time for us at the Neighboring Movement, so we are actually planning to take the next few weeks off of new recordings in order to work on other projects. That means this week and for the following 2 weeks, we are going to be re-releasing some of our favorite episodes from The Neighbor Next Door. This week, we're presenting an episode that was originally released almost exactly a year ago, on July 23rd, 2019. The episode is about social capital, which is a concept that's very important to our work and is also pretty fun to talk about, as you're about to see. It's also going to be very related to the topic of the re-release episode that we will present next week, so you'll definitely want to tune into both, as they're very closely related and pretty fun to listen to together. Then, the following week, we'll present a re-released neighboring tip, as we'll be due for one of those. And then, we'll be back with an original episode on August 18th. We hope you enjoy these re-released episodes, and today's episode on social capital. And, as always, thank you for listening to The Neighbor Next Door.
Hello, faithful listeners. Welcome to The Neighbor Next Door.
Before we start our episode today, we have a special request from those of you who've found this podcast helpful, or if you just listened to it and didn't find it helpful, but you care about us as people. We are doing a little fundraising campaign, and you know the podcast does take some resources to make happen, and so we're asking any podcast listeners who are willing to go to neighboringmovement.org/donate. And mark that you are giving because you are a podcast listener, so that we know that that's where it's coming from. Matt's got nothing to offer.
Well, no, I was just thinking how much I wish that we could get Guy Raz to say what you just said.
I know.
Because he's the pro, right?
Let me try.
Okay, do a Guy Raz impersonation.
Hi, I'm Guy Raz, and I just want you to know that public radio comes from viewers like you.
Does that... Viewers? Well, yeah. I mean, that was good. Listeners. That's right.
Like you. Okay, you get the idea. Neighboringmovement.org/donate. We really appreciate your help.
All right.
And now on to the episode.
That's right.
Banjo. Cue banjo.
Welcome to The Neighbor Next Door, a podcast where we talk about the power and importance of neighboring. I'm your host, Matthew Johnson, and I am joined once again on the front porch by my colleague and neighboring, Adam Barlow Thompson.
Good morning, everyone. I guess I don't know that it's morning for you. It's morning for us.
It is morning.
And so that's where my head's at.
Coffee on the front porch.
Yeah. So, Matt, what are we doing on the podcast today?
All right. Well, today we're going to do a little deep dive, and you and I are going to unpack a concept that can be a little bit challenging for people to wrap their minds around, but it is really important. It helps us understand the importance of neighboring.
Yes, it does.
So, let's
and
get started.
And that concept is baked goods.
Yes. No.
No, that wasn't it?
That's not it.
Okay.
You want to guess again?
Let me guess. It's the term that means everything and nothing. It's social capital. That's right.
Social capital. I know. So if you're like us, the first time we heard social capital, we were like, huh?
What?
What is that?
Yeah.
So we're going to try and tell several stories in this episode because social capital sounds weird, but it's actually really practical and applicable.
Well, we make it practical and applicable because we are not great at theoretical.
So we've
got to keep it practical or we don't understand it otherwise.
That's right. All right.
So give us a story of what that might look like in real life.
Okay. So I'm going to tell a story about our neighbor Fred,
who this season's dedicated to.
That's right. All of season two is dedicated to Fred. He passed away in May, but Fred was a man with a lot of social capital, and this story I think illustrates it so well. He had a riding lawnmower that he loved, and the wheel bearing went out on his lawnmower, and he was a fix-it kind of guy. I mean, he was in his 80s, and he just, you know, you just fix things yourself.
Yeah, because if I had something like that, I'd be like, well, that's done. Throw it away.
You would, the entire riding lawnmower would just go into your dumpster.
That's right.
But not Fred. He fixed stuff. And so he went, like, to Sears and JCPenney's looking for...
Which, by the way...
Yeah.
Who goes to JCPenney's looking for wheel bearings?
Well, they have the crap. They have a tool section, don't they?
I don't know.
Okay.
Only, I mean, Fred would think of that, though. Yes, like, yes. I would never think of that.
And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
he went to hardware stores,
he
too.
He definitely went to hardware stores and everywhere. It was like $75 to buy just the wheel bearing.
Right.
That he would go in and he would have to, you know, he would replace. And he was like, man, I don't know. I don't want to spend that much money. And he kept looking. But he also went down the street and talked to our neighbor, Craig, who is a mechanic, a jack of all trades who fixes everything. And he was like, Craig, I'm so frustrated. Everywhere I'm looking, like, these wheel bearings cost $75. And Craig said, oh, man, don't go there. Mm-hmm. You need to go to Harbor Freight. Mm-hmm. He said, at Harbor Freight, you'll buy not only the wheel bearing, but the entire wheel assembly and tire comes in a package. And it's like $15.
Right.
And so Fred was like, awesome. So he went. It was true. He found them exactly as Craig described, super cheap. In fact, he bought not only one, but two, still only paid half as much.
Right.
Came home, fixed it himself, and had a spare ready to go because Fred was awesome. Because
Fred always has a spare of everything.
He does. Spare ladder, spare drill.
Spare crock pots.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. He got everything.
So... that is an example of social capital. It's about relationships and the value of those relationships.
Which in this case can actually be like, you can get to an actual number, dollar amount.
That's right. In this case, it's what, $55
right.
that he saved or yeah. 60, yeah, $50.
So math is not maybe this. Christopher, could you just edit that part out and just put in the right number, whatever it is? That's okay. one good story of social capital. Yeah.
So we wanted to give you something to picture, because now Adam's going to lay a definition of social capital on you.
So there's a guy named Robert Putman who wrote a book called Bowling Alone. Mm-hmm. Anybody who writes about or talks about social capital is going to mention Bowling Alone. And it's an interesting title, actually, I mean, I think, because it's very, like, there's a certain image that comes with it. The cover of the book is a guy literally at a bowling alley by himself.
Yeah.
And it's this stark contrast of, like, how we spend more time alone without relationship versus what happens when we are in relationship. So Putman defines it social capital. And if you go to bowlingalone.com, you can find this yourself as well. But he says the central premise of social capital is the social networks have value. And then he points to two kind of ways that we're going to, the two things we're going to look for to kind of talk about when social capital is happening. So social capital refers to the collective value of all social networks, which is who people know, and the inclinations that arise from these networks to do things for each other, which he calls the norms of reciprocity. Because that's a term people use often and they understand.
That's right. That's right.
I'm just wondering. I go up to my neighbor's, you know, door, knock on their door. I'm looking to establish some norms of reciprocity. Do you have any milk?
Slam the door in your face.
So this is the thing about Putman. He is a genius, but he also writes like a genius.
Yes. He doesn't write for the common folk.
No, it's not a... The book is like 1,000 pages long, and the whole thing reads like that. So it's hard... Like, people use this term a lot, but not... People don't usually know... Like, the definition's a little shifty.
It's a little shifty. And and I mean, we say people use it a lot. People in our circles use it.
Right. Social scientists, people who need to write grants.
Yes. Yeah. So what I would say right here is... The advantage of using the term social capital is that oftentimes when we think about making communities stronger, we think of financial capital.
Right.
We think like, well, if you want to make a community stronger, you need to get more money into the community. And what Putnam is playing with here is this idea that there are other types of capital.
Maybe even more important.
As it turns out, yes, that there are more than money, the value of relationships and reciprocity. So you named these two components.
There's
I guess we should maybe.
So really, if I was to say these things in my own, you know, my own very clear, concise language, then I would say it's really about being able to give and receive from a network of people who you know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's your neighbors, coworkers, friends, family, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's the give and take that happens there, and that there's value in that, both financial value, but also other forms of value as well.
You're not going to successfully reduce crime in a community if there's no social capital or low social capital, because what you need is, first you need strong relationships in that community, and then you do other things on top of that that help address crime.
Yeah. So one of the reasons we thought we wanted to do an episode on social capital is because it is one of the like main arguments of why we tell people they should be good neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, neighboring, whenever you're out there like working on doing one of the neighboring tips or trying to meet your neighbors, you are intentionally or unintentionally creating social capital at the same time. And so we use social capital in that sense, and we try to describe it. We have kind of a fun way of describing it that I think, I mean, you know, not to brag, but I think is better than the way that most of the academic folks go about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What was that sound, Matt?
Adam, that sound was the sound of Jenga blocks. That's right. So my wife, Catherine, who is a teaching genius.
She's a great educator.
Yeah. So gifted at helping people understand things.
Mm-hmm.
When we first learned about social capital, she said, oh my gosh, we should develop social capital Jenga.
Right.
And so, Adam, would you help describe to our listeners, because Jenga was big in the 90s. I don't know if it's as big now as it used
people
to be.
People know what Jenga is, I think.
Yeah.
But I'll describe to you what is in front of us. We actually have it sitting out in front of us right now. And so Jenga is a game made up of many different blocks, and they're stacked. You know, there's three blocks at the bottom, and then there's three blocks on top of it going in the opposite direction, and then that goes up building a tower. And in social capital Jenga, each of the blocks is painted a different color, and the colors matter because they are tied to different things that either contribute to social capital or work against social capital. And so we bring this game, we have both small version and a large version, and we bring it often to our trainings and have people play this game.
Yes. Yeah. And the way the game works is that you draw a card, and on the card, it has a situation, something happens in the community, and then you have to take a step based on what that action was.
So, you know, we bring people up, we give them a card, and then they have to read the card, and the card will tell them which color they have to remove from the social capital Jenga. We should say that the base of the Jenga game is made up of more of the things that are
healthy
and create social capital. So think of the base, the kind of bottom four or five layers of it as kind of the foundation of your neighborhood that is built on these really important blocks. Which, what are some of those categories?
So some of those categories would be like, there's green blocks that are economic development. There are blue blocks that's personal health. There's brown blocks that represent neighborhood safety, yellow blocks that represent environment, and pink blocks that represent trust.
Right.
Now, then some of the negative blocks would include purple blocks, which represent greed.
Yeah.
Red blocks that represent scarcity. black blocks that represent individualism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't always think of individualism as being negative.
Right. But in the sense of whether or not you're building social capital,
yeah,
it doesn't help.
That's right. That's right. And the last one is orange blocks, and those represent mobility.
Another one.
Yeah.
That's another like, negative. I thought that was good.
I thought that was good. And by mobility, we mean the ability to leave your community or leave your neighborhood, right?
Right.
So, and in the examples that we use, it's not long-term leaving. It's not like moving away.
Yeah.
It's more like getting away for weekends.
Right.
And that kind of stuff.
I sleep here, but I don't really do much else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of the examples. So
that is.
We met a college student who lived in our neighborhood one time. He was just out of college. And I knew him, and I was like, I didn't know you live in our neighborhood. And he said, yeah, well, I'm renting this apartment. He said, but I mean, all I ever do is sleep in the apartment. Like, I'm never here.
Right.
Because I'm off, you know, mountain climbing and hiking and camping. I mean, he was a cool dude, right? But if you're only renting an apartment to sleep right. in it, you're not strengthening the social capital.
And we should say, you're not strengthening the social capital of that neighborhood. Right?
Right.
Like, he might be building social capital with his rock climbing team or
mm-hmm.
crew.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's right.
As far as, like, neighborhood and neighboring,
yes.
it's not happening.
It's weakened. Yeah. So here's an example. You might be standing in line, standing in the circle. You would draw this card. During a power outage, one affluent household goes to a hotel instead of sharing their neighbor's generator. Add one black individualism block to the top of the pile.
And let's just go ahead and say, like, where we got these examples from at this point.
Where did this example come from, Adam?
It was from my family. And we weren't the people with the generator. We were the people who were like, the power's out. Well, let's get out of here. So what happened is we had a big tree that went down in our backyard. We left because we were like, well, you know, when we have money, we just need to get out of here and charge our phones so we can call somebody to take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
By the time we got back to our house, our neighbors had already chopped up all the wood and cleared our driveway for us so that we were ready to go.
So no shame, and maybe that's something we need to say, as we talk about...
As you shame me?
Yes,
yeah, okay.
Now that I've shamed Adam... But you, dear listener, don't feel shamed.
That's
because
right.
our culture
yeah.
is set up to actually diminish social capital. And that's why Putnam's work is so groundbreaking.
Yes. It's the culture is asking me in that moment to think of myself as a consumer, not as a citizen. And what's happening there then is, like, as a consumer, the way that I fix that problem of my power out and a tree down in my driveway is I go spend money
mm-hmm.
to fix
mm-hmm.
it.
Yes. Yeah.
And I go find professionals who can come in and fix my problems
mm-hmm.
for
mm-hmm.
a dollar amount versus social capital, where I have neighbors who I've built relationship with that are I can ask for help from. And
yeah.
then they come over and take care of it. And there's actually no, in that example, there wasn't any exchange of money. Other than I got to keep my money,
right.
if I would have thought that through, but
yeah,
yeah,
which is, yeah, I mean, but that's an interesting aspect of all of this work is, like,
yeah,
shifting our thinking from the idea that money produces happiness, right? Like,
right.
I have to have enough money to be able to pay for every emergency that comes up so that I can be happy, shifting away from that to saying,
yeah.
I need to have strong relationships with my neighbors. Because actually, greater joy
mm-hmm.
comes through, and happiness comes through those relationships.
And we don't give relationships the same quality of value that we do money, which is stupid because it's not accurate to the way the world works.
Right.
So I just was working with a nonprofit that does, they work with families who are experiencing homelessness. And the woman who's the executive director there said, people in our program don't run out of money. They run out of relationships.
Mm.
Because anybody who has a good network of relationships doesn't end up homeless.
Yes.
They end up at someone else's house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They go right. stay at their aunt and uncle or at their neighbor or whatever. But if you're actually on the streets, it's because you ran out of relationships.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's eye-opening.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a little bit about social capital Jenga.
You know, we haven't done any remove.
Yeah, let's do some of the negative. How do those get removed?
Okay. Oh, here's a bit of a burn. Mm-hmm. So a church pays utility bills for folks in need instead of hiring them based on their skills. Two green economic development blocks.
Yeah. This is a burn that we've got pushback on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because when we read this with a group of church people, which we often are training within church settings, mm-hmm. church people are like, yeah, but I can't hire neighbors because our policy.
Right. That's right.
Says we have to get 3 bids and they have to be certified in a certain way and they have to whatever. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that's what the institution does, is it builds up barriers to keeping money going to professionals instead of to actual neighbors.
Yeah, yeah. But if you can find a way to creatively say, wow, I get it that you need to pay your utility bill. Can I pay you for a skill that you mm-hmm. have that would be a benefit to my community and also get you the money that you need to pay your utilities?
Like right.
you're building a relationship.
Right.
You're honoring the gifts of the person. And you're still addressing the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is real. Like,
yeah. And we should say, like, there's a difference here in, like, the person who comes in. Like, we have this at our office. We have people come in and be like, can I just rake your yard for $2?
Right.
And that's not we're not discovering their giftedness and then using the giftedness in a way that's helpful in that mm-hmm. setting. Mm-hmm. It's just somebody who needs some money. And we usually don't actually say yes to that because it's really more of a needs-based like interaction,
right?
Versus right. I discovered a person in my neighborhood, I know their skill, and now I'm going to use my financial means to pay for their skill mm-hmm. to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
it's a little bit of a different thing there.
That's right.
What's another remove from the Jenga?
yeah, here's another church one. Kind of church. Jerry, the street corner evangelist, walks around the neighborhood each day and tells neighbors they're going to hell if they don't change.
Yeah.
Remove one pink trust block.
Oh, God. Yeah. Can we just insert that sound of the blocks tumbling again right there?
The whole neighborhood's falling down.
So we have this guy at our neighborhood who walks his dog, and if you are unfortunate enough to be outside when he's outside, he will stop you and tell you that he'll bring up that you're going to hell if you don't know Jesus in a certain mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, most of the people on our block would say that they believe in God.
Right.
But
and then he tells them they believe in the wrong way.
Right.
It's really strange.
It's so annoying.
Yeah, yeah. And he's super, he's really mean about it. Like, there's a woman right. that we know, very, very kind, and she, you know, struck up a conversation with him, and the conversation it concluded with him standing across the street yelling at her mm-hmm. that her beliefs were all wrong and she's going to go to hell.
Right.
He's a really extreme example, but
yeah, it makes me think of a good another episode that we've done that we should reference here.
Oh yeah,
it's the Elaine Heath episode.
True. Yes.
And so if you want to know like the difference between what evangelism might be in a healthy way versus what it's not, mm-hmm. go back to that Elaine Heath episode. And we're not against evangelism, but we have a very different understanding of what it means. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
In closing, then, there's a little paragraph I think we should read from Peter Block.
Yeah. So Putnam did some extensive research in many Italian towns, was actually where he was looking at the impact of social capital. And what he discovered was that things that we often think make communities stronger did not. So here's the list, and this is Peter Block saying this. Geography, history, great leadership, fine programs, economic advantage, and any other factors that we traditionally use to explain success actually made a marginal difference in the health of a community.
It's It's crazy.
It is crazy.
Because that's the thing that everybody pays attention to first, and yeah. like policies set on those things.
That's right.
All this money is poured into those things.
Yeah, yeah. So instead, community well-being was the determinant. It simply had to do with the quality of the relationships and the cohesion that existed among its citizens. So in all these towns, that's what made them strong, was mm-hmm. the quality of the relationships and not all these other things.
Right.
Crazy.
So from that, as you're thinking about these concepts, if it feels too heady for you, or it feels like, wow, that was a lot of like theory and academia kind of stuff, mm-hmm. don't worry. Because all you really need to do is stop listening to this podcast and go and be a good neighbor.
That's right. And I would really challenge you. I know that one of our neighboring tips from season one mm-hmm. was the practice of borrowing. Mm-hmm. I would really push you that direction. Take the risk. But I hope that like hearing all of this about social capital and how important it is makes it easier to say, okay, this is worth it. It's worth it for me to go acknowledge one of my needs, borrow something from a neighbor, and see what happens. And know that it's a slow process. It's not going to transform your neighborhood overnight.
Right.
But it will with time.
Yeah. I mean, it's transformed our neighborhood in yeah. not a like unreasonable amount of time.
No. Yeah. yeah. I mean, 5-6 years.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Well, you've done it again, listener. Somebody just called us the click and clack of good neighboring.
Yes.
And they always end their episode. Well, you've done it again. You've wasted a perfectly good hour.
Listening to us, two goofballs on the front porch. yeah. Don't neighbor like my brother.
Well, if you do want to know more about our work or give Christopher a comment about what he should have cut out of this episode, please go to our website, neighboringmovement.org. You can find all the neighboring tips there. You can learn all the places you can subscribe to our wonderful podcast. And we'll be back soon with another fascinating episode.
That's right. Thanks for listening and happy neighboring.
Happy neighboring.
And you're fighting us.